live from Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl from BFF Keon. Keon, how's your week?
Hello, my week was pretty good. I slept like crap the last 2 days, so this should be interesting. I haven't slept this poorly in a while, and I'm wondering if I'll like break into a mania of some kind at some point if I don't.
What do you mean? Like you're getting less sleep than you normally would, or are you getting more sleep?
The last 2 nights, I've gotten like very little sleep, like consecutive nights of very little sleep in a way that I haven't ever had before.
You drinking more caffeine or?
No, I drink one cup of coffee a day. I'm pretty chill with caffeine.
Interesting. So,
for me, I don't know why. I was just like, I'd wake up and I don't want to go back to bed.
This is where audiobooks come in. I know you're not a fan of audiobooks, but if you play an audiobook, that usually gets me to sleep right away.
Yeah, I'm not distracted by thoughts or anything. Like, I don't really have, I'm like one of those.
No, I mean, you just get bored. You get like, you hear it and it's like the monotone voice of an audiobook's just like, and then he walked through, it's kind of like one of those.
I see. Yeah, I don't think that works for me probably, but.
Is it the blue light stuff?
No, I think it might be really, I haven't been getting enough sun. I think that's part of it. I haven't been outside enough. And I think it's just like messed up my circadian rhythm. Or like I'm thinking about some things and they have me excited, but they're not like really thoughts as much as they are like putting me in an emotional state.
Yep.
Anyway, so that's fun. I went to BitDevs this week.
Oh yeah.
Scores, we did another underground BitDevs.
That was weird because it's 5 weeks this month, right? And you guys do it on the third week or
isn't it supposed to be the third Thursday?
So it's the third Thursday. Okay.
Yeah. It's always been the third Thursday. And so that's what we did.
Because I thought it was the same week as ours that we do the Builders Club. And like
you do first Monday, don't you?
No, we do the third or basically whenever they tell us the date, that's when we do it. Ours is on Monday. So it's like, but I always remembered it was the same week. So in my head, I was like, oh, that's.
Oh, I see. Yeah, in past months, it might have actually fallen on the same week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it did this time.
Because I think it's like 5 weeks in July.
Mm. Yeah, it might be five Thursdays.
How was it?
It was great. It was fun. Yeah, I thought it was a blast. We talked a lot about BIP 110 fork dynamics.
Oh, that's what we're talking about today.
A variety of other things, stuff that we've talked about on this podcast already, because about a month of Bitcoin stuff, a lot of stuff I hadn't considered much.
How did Scoresby do?
He's doing great at it. He's really cut out for it.
Yeah.
He does a good job of listening, a good job of presenting information in kind of a humble way. Like,
yeah, he's drawing, just a good explainer.
He's good. Yeah. Just a good dude. One of the best.
I feel like Buck was good with stuff like that. I always like Buck explaining things.
Yeah. I think there's a self-selection where people who want to do that are usually good at it.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. How was your week?
It's busy. Just been busy with the the startup day stuff. And then we're getting another event planned later this year. And then a lot of coding sessions late at night. And then, it's just a lot of stuff. I feel like I have like 10 jobs at this point.
You started drinking Mountain Dew and eating Hot Pockets? Because that's also...
No.
I was watching a show.
I've been eating a lot of P. Terry's this week, though. I've been on a P. Terry's binge.
It's kind of close.
Those burgers are good, though. I just hate smash burgers. And when you go out there and you look, you see what's out there in Austin.
You have bad
it's just
burgers, I have to say.
That's fine. You like when I see in Austin, all I see is smash burgers. And to me, like, don't get me wrong, I like smash burgers, but I feel like there's just like a thin slice of meat. And it's just like three of those. And then it just equals to like a normal slice of meat. And it's all burnt and crispy. And it's just like, dude, I don't like my burgers burnt like that. I like to, I like a big old chunk of beef. So.
Yeah, we've had this. Yeah. Unfortunately, you have.
But like everybody has. Like if you have a burger in Austin, it's a smash burger. Like 99% of burgers in Austin are smash burgers. Unless you go to like P. Terry's or, In-N-Out or something like that. Then it's not a smash burger. It's just a regular size burger.
Yeah, I would say that most smash burgers I get are at least as thick as the patties at P. Terry's. So I don't
even know. Well, even the one over here down the street that we love, the
Burger Bar.
Yeah, Burger Bar. Even that one is a smash burger, which sucks. But
your comment about the thickness doesn't land for me, because when I get a burger at P. Terry's, that's the same thickness as a burger at Burger Bar, except the Burger Bar patty has a better crust on it and a better Maillard reaction and tastes way better. And has a better, higher quality bun.
I disagree. I will have to do a taste test sometime, because I was like you and I thought the same thing. Then when I eat Burger Bar, I love Burger Bar. Don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on Burger Bar. I love these places. They're great places, but I've just seen a consistent thing with like these smash burgers where they're just like a lot thinner and they're just like, you know, it's like crusty on the side and it just burnt. It's just like, what? I don't like eating meat. That's not how I grew up. I grew up eating an American burger. It was like big old chunk of beef. I'm sure I'm not the only person that feels like this.
I think you are.
Maybe, but like I feel like the smash burgers is a whole psyop, because that's a whole nother rant.
I think there are bad smash burgers. I just don't know how you think that category of burger is worse.
But I feel like the smash burger is just a cheaper way to get people to.
Oh, that is absolutely
right. It's just like a cheaper way to get people to like pay more for a burger and feel like they're getting more, but when in reality it's like the same thing, it's just smashed.
I feel like smash burger touched you like
at some point. That's why I've been eating other burgers, dude, like Casino Camino. Like, you'll never see a freaking smash burger at Casino Camino because they're a real American burger place. That's all I'm saying. I'm
sorry.
Even at the Omni, they make good burgers. They're like, they're not smash burgers, they're like thick burgers.
They're steakhouse burgers.
You're never there you go. Topher said you're never gonna get the meat sweats eating a smash burger.
I have.
Anyways, I feel like there's a debate on smash burger, yay or nay. Anyway, if you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We talk about the top stories every week here on stacker.news, and yeah, check it out. We have some live streams going on. Seems surprisingly like more people watch the vertical version of Stacker News Live, I've noticed, than they watch the landscape view. So that's an interesting observation. And then other things, Wumble posts clips every week. He has some good Wasabi Wallet ones this week, the Jimmy Song conversation that we had, the Bull Bitcoin stuff. A lot of cool clips if you want to check them out. They're not vertical yet, but maybe one day we'll get them there. And then the Forgotten Satoshi emails, which seem to have the most views this week. And then we're dropping shorts. We drop them right after the show, and you can check them out. Seems a lot of people like watching the shorts. And then we're going to jump into the comments this week because we have a ton of comments. Like, we're going to jump into all the Fountain comments, all the YouTube comments. So if you left a comment in the past month and a half, we're going to respond, good or bad. I mean, I try to be nice. I'm mostly nice. Okay. With all that, let's jump into the number three top story this week. It is when the financial system can't reach people in crisis, Bitcoin can. This is from Siggy47. Had 12 comments, 10,000 sats in the Bitcoin and politicals and law territory. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, it's an article about how fiat kind of fails in certain situations, specifically donation platforms. I think the one they use here is GoFundMe. There's a family in Gaza that was raising funds on GoFundMe, but due to sanctions, they're not allowed to accept money directly. So GoFundMe has this ability for you to select a trusted, I forget what they call it, but like a trusted someone to receive the money on your behalf who will then transfer the money to you. And so that's what this family did. They chose their brother-in-law. And so they raised the money through there. And of course, GoFundMe takes their percentage, about 4% in platform fees, which isn't that big of a deal relative to the sum they raised. They raised over $50,000. But their brother-in-law, they didn't say why, but their brother-in-law never sent them the money.
Oh, wow. From GoFundMe.
From GoFundMe. Wow. So I don't know. It doesn't say. I wish it would. But maybe the brother-in-law couldn't get them the money because whatever bank he wanted to send them the money on was subject to sanctions too. And like GoFundMe couldn't allow them to receive the money. But they basically weren't able to get the money, and their family is stuck in Gaza. That is kind of the
gosh. Yeah. So it sounds like GoFundMe deducted 3.9% in fees, which is 2,000 euros, or what is that? Liras? What is the L there?
I think it's euros.
Euros. Okay. Over 2,000 euros. They got a total of 55,000 in euros that was raised. So roughly around 53,000 euros. And he kept all of it. Did they say like what happened or was there anything else?
No, they just kind of, they didn't really get into why the money didn't eventually get to them from their brother-in-law. But they kind of just, they use that to motivate a story about how fiat is broken. And crowdfunding on fiat is broken, especially in these situations where you're not like in a Western country and, you know, maybe governments and banks don't want you to receive any money.
Well, remember we saw that with the whole trucker thing when that was going on. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And then I forget who interceded, but a Bitcoiner interceded, and then they had all this money that was able, that was basically raised, and then they were able to give that to the truckers during that protest.
I think they were reusing the same address for donations, and then I think some people ended up getting in trouble and their bank accounts getting shut down, the people who donated to them. Mm. So it wasn't, they were using Bitcoin, which is a good idea, but they did not use it effectively. But they did, it did end up, I think, getting many of the truckers help. And so it was good in that way. It just, you know, failed in an important but less important way. So they used this article to motivate discussing Bitcoin and Bitcoin fundraising platforms like Geyser and Agora. Geyser's been around for a long time, and they've been doing this kind of thing for a long time. And then they talk about the various issues that still exist, even when you're using freedom money like Bitcoin, and you can avoid like the sanctions and the regimes and stuff like that. And the main issue is sort of related to the failing that GoFundMe had, where you end up, or it's just an issue of trust and accountability. It's like, how do you know that the thing that you're giving money to is actually legitimate? And they aren't just taking your money, and how does trust work and stuff like that in these situations? And they get into a discussion about that in that article too. It's just a good article about monies and money problems that are kind of tangentially related to, like, when you get outside of like the structure of the money and whether you can send it to someone or not, like what other realities exist. And one of them is like knowing you're sending it to the right person.
Okay, so I've heard of Geyser before, so that's just mostly more for like Bitcoin projects and stuff like that, but I've never heard of Agoria.
Agoria is Soapbox.
Okay, so Agoria is more about like humanitarian efforts as opposed to like Bitcoin projects or something like that.
I think they might focus primarily on the humanitarian stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That's also built on Nostr entirely because it's from the Soapbox people who are also Nostr people.
Nice. Okay. Well, there you go.
But I think also Geyser's been rebuilt on Nostr, so there might not be much difference in that way.
Check out Agoria if you looking to donate to different campaigns that are doing humanitarian efforts. Because I personally feel it's just better. A lot of these NGOs kind of have like, you know, there's like a whole game to them, but I feel like when you can just donate directly to the people, I feel like that's like the best way. You hear a lot of stuff with like the Red Cross and like, you know, stuff like that, where it doesn't actually get to the people that it's supposed to, and you know, all that, those type of things. But yeah, it's sad to see GoFundMe kind of lose its way over time, because I remember it was such a, when it got launched initially, it was such a like a, because there was like Indiegogo, Kickstarter, and then GoFundMe came out, and that was like a big thing, and a lot of people were super grateful for that. And I've donated to GoFundMes before from like people who, you know, pass away or whatever might happen. But I didn't know it got really bad, unfortunately. Cool. Let's jump into the number two top story this week. Is chain analysis is built into Spark. This is from Crew, 38 comments, 14,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, someone at, I think it's Spark or Second, accused Spark pretty publicly, and it made the rounds a few days ago, of doing chain analysis on their wallets and transactions and users. They made that conclusion by looking at their like GraphQL schema, which is like their API, and seeing that their API had documentation referencing like chain analysis features. It turns out it's kind of fake news, or it's at least, you know, it's possible. It's at least not, this isn't a feature that I think is used by Spark. It could be used internally. They could be doing chain analysis internally. We don't know. Of course, they're, you know, they're running servers. We don't know what is running on them. But at least like the central claim here is wrong. And there was a bunch of back and forth and a bunch of like the CTO of Spark or Lightspark came out and discussed it. Then I believe the CTO of Second came out and said, we retract the statement. We've discussed it with Spark. We've discussed it with Breeze and we're actually wrong. So they're not, this API isn't called when you're using a Spark wallet. I think the origin of this API was their prior product before they released Spark, before they had this state chain, this federated state chain that everyone is using. They had another like custodial product, or it was a little, the trust assumptions were worse. It's the one that I think Coinbase was using. I think Coinbase is one of Spark's first, or LightSpark's first big customers. And it had these chain analysis features in it. And I'm not sure how many people are using it now. I think they have a bunch of other customers, but I don't know. But they're distinct products is what it boils down to. There are like financial instruments involved. So you have to be skeptical of everything. The guy who's making the claims and a lot of people making the noise about Spark are from a direct competitor.
Incentives rule everything around me. Boom. Get the money.
Yeah, and people get really weird and dishonest about their financial incentives. Like, I think
incentives rule everything around me. Boom, grab the money.
Grubels was saying he was only calling Grubels, who works at for Bark, was like, I have a moral obligation to call out Spark for doing this. And it's like, yeah, maybe you do, but we don't know if you do now, or if that's actually true.
Everything around me. That should have been the title of this book.
Cause like you have a financial obligation too. And so, you know, it's worth, I don't know. It's, you should be very careful with that kind of stuff. And especially when someone's like, I have to be honest. I'm morally obligated. Things like that. It should perk your ears up a little bit. Anyway,
So they responded, and then he basically just said everything they said, that it's
said,
I've discussed this many times with past, so we won't belabor the point. Spark allows for transactions to be hidden. I mean, it's also one of those things too, where it's like, it's still early in their process, and I still don't understand where people are complaining about. Are they complaining because they're using chain analysis, or are they complaining because they haven't said they're like KYCing and doing that before? Like, I'm still confused. Like, where
KYCing what?
Like, I'm still confused on like where are they upset with Spark about? Is it literally just because they're competitors, which I don't think is like overall 100%. It's some of it, but, or is it more because like they didn't admit it publicly? It's kind of
what admit what publicly?
That this whole argument could have been avoided had they just said, hey, we're doing this, and this, and they keep just like I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm basically saying is like, what are people really upset with initially outside of just it being Spark? Because Spark people just hate Spark for some reason.
Well, I think because it's like
why is that? Is it because David Marcus and the whole Libra coin thing?
I think there's a number of reasons.
Is it because of like actually they're using chain analysis or they're not? Is it, I feel like there's just like, they've always been hated from the very beginning. And I'm just curious, like, why is that?
I think it's multifaceted. You know, love has many angles, and I think so does hate. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. I think it has to do with David Marcus. It has to do with they're well funded. It has to do with they have a great team. They're executing well, getting big partners. This stuff fell shortly after they got, I think, Polymarket as a customer.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. So they're like,
they're succeeding.
Yeah, well, they're like doing things in Lightning that a lot of other companies had struggled to do because they have some like unique UX things, and people, you know, trust a figurehead like David Marcus to be able to execute.
And he has like a 20-year, 30-year career. Like, those are people that he, you know what I mean, from his past projects.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying anyone should trust trust Spark and Light Spark. I think everyone should be extremely skeptical. A lot of the software is not open source. Some of the critical pieces of software are not open source. And the trust is novel that you're placing in Spark and Spark operators. And you should treat any Spark wallet like a custodial wallet and anticipate getting shotgun KYC'd at some point, because we just don't know. We don't know how it shakes out. It is too novel.
Yeah.
And the trust is unlike anything else we've seen before. And you can't say it's something like the trust is something like Phoenix Wallet. It is something different.
We're still experimenting. And this is where I feel like Roy from Breeze will at least, talk about this publicly. And he's gone on Stacker News a couple of times talking about Spark. And there's been a lot of, back and forth with that. So it's always good to see multiple people talking about it openly. So I guess there's that. But anyways, cool stuff. The number one top story this week is... What did it say? Samurai or?
Scammerai
wallet, huh? Postmodem.md. This is from Scoresby. 7,16,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Scoresby shared Nopara's postmortem on the whole Samurai debacle, not that predates Samurai getting indicted and getting shut down and stuff like that. I don't know if you recall, but over the since about 2020, there was a lot of drama between both Wasabi and Samurai. I know I started getting really interested in Bitcoin development around this time, and one of the first people I talked to when I came to Austin was Ben Carmen, and I'm like, what should I work on? And he's like, oh, you should work on CoinJoin stuff because there's a lot of drama there. And that was my first entree into the drama here. I didn't really understand what was going on, but this post pretty much completely explains all of the drama between the two CoinJoin implementations. And it starts out by Nopara explaining, the central claim that he was making against Samurai from the very beginning, which is that they are storing their users' XPubs by default, and they have Tor is opt-in, not opt-out.
Samurai was?
Yes. Basically, it was making some obvious privacy. It was failing in obvious ways with regard to privacy. And they were, in their opinion, they handled the feedback on that really poorly and explained it poorly, and then also attacked them. There are other, even predating that, I believe Nopara at the beginning here says that they forked their code, or they took ownership of their ideas and claimed that they co-created Zero Link with Samurai's founders and developers claimed that they co-created Zero, the early stages of Zero Link, when it was Nopara overwhelmingly based on commit messages. This is my reading of it. There's a lot of text in here, but anyway, this is the whole saga from back when these protocols didn't exist to, Keown being in jail and awaiting appeal, and ZK Snacks not being not operating anymore, stuff like that. I found it really, really informative, because I was just all this time, even though that was my first encounter with this 5 years ago, I had not done the research and figured out what the heck everyone was talking about.
What's the sock puppets thing?
So he's getting harassed. Nopara documents having been harassed by Samurai people, and more explicitly or directly harassed by the co-founders of Samurai, death threats, other types of harassment to Nopara. And so that's him documenting it and documenting the harassment and just why are they doing this? And I guess, and also another big feature in here is that when the servers were seized for Samurai, it contained many of the XPugs of many of their customers, and there are private communications in some of the testimony and government documents that the government published as part of their procedure or whatever that show I believe it's Keown being oh no they have access to the servers, they're going to have access to the X pubs, more or less, which would allow someone to like unwind all of the privacy of the customers of Samurai. Anyway, it's a big honky beast. But
what is this stuff? The criminal assist? What is all this stuff?
Wow. I think this is him saying that they were, Samurai would accuse Wasabi of being involved in like laundering money. Like it was just kind of this rivalry and how unfair. Nopara is saying how unfair it was.
Oh, the megaphone was bigger than the product.
Yeah, showing how much more successful Wasabi was relative to Whirlpool.
Crazy. Where did Scoresby find this? This was in. This is just on Nopara's GitHub.
Yeah, I assume. I mean, Nopara's on X and stuff. I assume he shared it there.
Oh, he shared it there too. Okay.
It's also on Stacker News. You can tag him, and he'll respond usually.
Top comment was from Lutovo. He says Wasabi has always been much larger than Samurai. Anyone can verify this directly from blockchain data. This paper shows it. We use the number of fresh inputs as a proxy for popularity. You can see that during the ZK snacks period, Wasabi usage outperformed Samurai by a wide margin. Still a lot of Bitcoin though.
On both sides. Yeah, but I mean they're very profitable businesses. I think that's another motivation. That's like one of the reasons why Samurai has motive to harass Nopara and engage in bad faith arguments, because they're making millions of dollars.
There you go. Around me. Wow. I knew it was a lot of Bitcoin, but that's crazy. Let's hope they put that money to good use. Because now they're both shut down. Now they're just like open source projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what the outcome ended up becoming for both of them.
Yeah, so Samurai is shut down. Someone might be running a Whirlpool more recently, but Crew is running the most popular CoinJoin coordinator right now, and that is Wasabi-based.
Well, what did Solomon Sturge say? That CoinOS remains my favorite LM exchange wallet, easy to use, trusted. Okay.
What did that I don't know. That's irrelevant. Yeah,
that's weird. Okay, cool. That's all the top stories this week. If you're interested in catching out more of these interesting stories every week, check out stacker.news and get involved. Sign up. Do all the fun stuff the stackers do every week. And join them. We're going to jump into... Before we jump into Wumble's picks, we're going to jump into our sponsor. That's right, Bitcoin Quest. Bitcoin Quest is the, I think it's one of the best places. Let me put this graphic on the screen real quick. I still need to go back and fix this thing. Eventually you will. Sorry, Phil. We'll get there. Also need to reply to your email. Oh, we'll get there this week. Do it this weekend. Bitcoin Quest. Learn Bitcoin, earn real sats. So it seems like a lot of people have signed up for this. We even have a comment. Stay tuned for later in the show where somebody's talking about Bitcoin Quest. Let me bring it up over here on my side so you can check it out. Bitcoin Quest, easiest way to get onboarded, to onboard pretty much anybody new into Bitcoin. You just select that you're new into Bitcoin. You say, I want to learn, and then you get going. Why Bitcoin, how to use it, and go into the Lightning Network. Boom. And then you're there. Your quest begins. And then Buddy and Nacho and all the little guys down there will help you get you exploring and learning more about everything there is to learn about Bitcoin. It's really, really cool. As you can see here, you have like your sign up thing here, and there's multiple ways to sign up. You could start checking out the new hot topics like the BIP110 stuff. You can see from the community what people are saying about it. It's a really quick way to learn about some of the hottest topics that you see out there. Michael Saylor on Bitcoin Control, Bitcoin Treasury Code stuff, all that kind of stuff. And then you can get into, you know, the normal stuff, the stuff that we had to learn when we first got there, like the white paper, and start earning rewards. Look, I just got 25 points just from Nacho checking out some white paper stuff. If you haven't seen Bitcoin Quest, check it out. It's one of the few places on the internet that you can learn and also earn sats while learning. Cool place. Bitcoin Quest, bitcoineducation.quest. Check it out. All right. With that, we're going to jump into our Wumbles picks every week on the wonderful world of Stacker News Live. We go to Wumble. We say, Wumble, what's out there? What have we missed? And he says, you know, Carr, this week I want you to talk about N64 retro gaming. And this is his post. I got into N64 retro gaming, and I'm loving it. This is from Krim TechNet. 10 comments, 5,556 cats, sats, cats, sats. I saw it look like a cat right there. Sats. Keon, did you read the story this week?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What is it?
Yeah, Krim TechNet is playing N64 stuff. I think they wrote in the past on Stacker News about a like mobile N64 setup that they carry around with them to play with other people.
So cool.
But they also stream and they've been playing a lot of Nintendo 64, and they talk about collecting cartridges, restoring them. There's a bunch of them out there, and they talk about why they started doing this, and motivation primarily is like stress reduction, but also that they have fond memories of playing N64, and there are a number of games, like 500 games that came out for N64, and most of them they haven't played. And so they're playing through them. I think they have a stream where they let, and there's the people who are watching the stream vote on which games they're going to play, and they play them through. So I think like no matter how difficult the game, they will sit there and they will play them through. Yeah. And they say that they do that because it's like at a different scale or in a stress reducing way. It's kind of like their business that they run, and that they have to focus like one step at a time, have to focus on the small challenge and defeating the small challenge before they get to the big challenge. And he says that, you know, whatever like that, like ports well to his actual real life, which I think is pretty cool. And then he talks about getting an M64, just Mod Retro has reproduced the Nintendo 64.
This one or new?
That's it. Oh, that's wow. Coming out. I think it might come out this month. It's like a couple $100, but it's all like, you know, it has like all the big switches and has the plug-in controller still. But it has like a modern board on it and allows you to overclock and stuff, but allow you to play all the old games without having to deal with an old console. I have their Game Boy Color. It's really good.
Oh yeah, I saw that. So did you know there's company. Did you know there's a Bitcoin game for big, like there's a Bitcoiner
there's
making
a Bitcoin Game Boy game.
Yeah, did you know that?
I saw. I've been seeing it. I remember that they shared that like a few years ago. I'm not sure what the progress is on it.
Laura was telling me that they're going to send us a copy of it at Startup Day in Guadalajara. So if you bring your Game Boy, you're going to be able to play it, and or somebody might just have a Game Boy, you know, that they'll bring. But yeah, I just found out about that this week. It's wild.
Yeah. Anyway, really cool.
Did you have a 64?
Little series. I did have a 64.
Which color did you have? I can tell which one you had, but go for it. What color did you have?
I had a black one.
Oh, you had a black one, really? We had a purple one.
Oh.
Yeah, the see-through one. This is when the IMAX were coming out and stuff. Everything was plastic. The only thing I didn't like about the 64 was the controller, because it was like three, and like everything used the joystick. So it was kind of weird holding it like that.
You didn't need to use the joystick. I think that was the main thing. It's like it was an optional. You could use the D-pad if you wanted to. They wanted to give you either option.
Yeah, but if you remember, like that was the first joystick that was out there. I think there's maybe the Dreamcast that came out slightly after the 64, but before the 64, that was the only joystick ever made for a console that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember like in the beginning, people like I don't remember Super Mario. Even Super Mario 64 didn't have everything was on the joystick, and then you would use the diagonal pad for like views and stuff. It was kind of weird. Anyways, just thought that was a
yeah.
That's really cool, man. Hopefully, we don't have a 64. Do you know, and yours just plays Game Boys, right? You don't have like a ROM stuff, right? You just have the cartridges.
Yeah, I like the, yeah, I just play cartridges on it.
Yeah. My favorite game for 64 was Maximum, was it Maximum Carnage? And then there was a True Lies game. I don't remember that True Lies Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. That was another really fun game. Those were my two favorite. What were your
Golden
favorite?
Eye, I think, is probably the best game that I played on it. There might be better games. So that's the main one that I played and liked a lot. We also played a lot of Mario Kart.
Yeah. Yeah, the classics.
Yeah.
Did you play Star Fox too?
I did. Yeah, that was also a good game. Not as good as GoldenEye, in my opinion, but good.
Dude, these were $50. I remember when they came out, they're like $50, $55 per game. Just crazy. I'm always surprised. Maybe somebody knows in the comments, but why don't people just continue making these games, like, even after they're like, do you know what I mean? Is
they
it just do. Because of the manufacturing, or is it because
they do keep making mod? M64 is coming out with brand new games for
that. The art cartridges, though.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
And you can, several of the cartridges that I own for the Game Boy Color, also brand new games that were never released.
Yeah. I feel like that's making a comeback. Cool stuff, Wombo. Wombo's question was around, in your opinion, what game console was the best for playing with friends? N64 had some great titles for group play. GoldenEye, Mario Kart, Keon, what do you think? What was the best?
I certainly played most of my games with friends on the N64. I don't think there was... I did play... I had a friend who had a PlayStation, and I would, like, watch him play, mostly. I don't think it had many co-op games. But that's something I always loved about Nintendo, and they stayed true to it even to this day, although they're branching out a little... They're getting a little far away from that vision, but the couch co-op, I think, is, like, key. So that is my opinion.
Yeah, I think for me, like, we definitely... Like, I grew up with a lot of brothers, so we definitely, like, had our sessions. But I think for me personally, when it got, like, really crazy, where it was, like, an all-night thing and, like, you know, connecting TVs and doing LAN party stuff, it was the Xbox, like, the first Xbox with the green dashboard and everything. Like, that was the one where, like, me and my friends would, like, be, like, set up rooms, basically, like, with this Xbox and another room, and that, but have, like, LAN parties with Halo and stuff. That was the machine for me, Wumble.
They had online gameplay back then.
Yeah, if you hooked up multiple Halos together, and I don't know if it was on a modded Xbox or not. I remember it was such a long time ago, but you'd be able to play against each other.
Oh,
using like the modded version of the Xbox. But then it got so popular because I remember doing that with my friends, and then other people would have it around town, so we would go meet them and play them there. And it was all Halo, and I sucked at Halo, so I would die right away. But yeah, this was before the internet, kids, before we had like DSL.
Really?
Yeah.
This was DSL, or this was before DSL?
No, you know, you're right. It would have been DSL. This would have been just Ethernet cords. Yeah. This is before Wi-Fi. Yeah, this was just Ethernet. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyways, that's my pick, Wumble. Let's jump into... We don't have any AI posts this week, even though there's a ton of stuff. We're going to jump into... let's jump into my post first, because I think this is probably the... You've been having a lot of AMAs this week on Stacker News that Scoresby's scheduling. But this one is probably the... Is this the most popular AMA ever? The mechanic one that's happening right now?
No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've definitely had ones with more comments on them before. I think I've gotten over 150 on an AMA before. I don't know. Maybe more. Who have we had this week? We had...
Alekos?
We had Alekos. We had McFlugel, who's like Get on Zero. We also had... Someone who wrote a book called Defending Bitcoin. I forget their exact name. Forgive me. That AMA was also really good. And we have Mechanic today, and tomorrow we have Paul Stork. But this Mechanic one is pretty good. I didn't ask many. I feel like a lot of people want to get in here and kind of take shots, which is fine. Mechanic takes their shots back and at people all the time. I just wanted to get to know the man a little bit better, because I don't really know much about them, and I kind of can't stand to listen to another podcast about BIP 110 stuff. So I asked some questions about that, and I've seen some videos from him. He seems like charismatic and seems to be pretty chill. And then, yeah, a lot of people ask about BIP 110 stuff. I think he mostly wanted to talk about BIP 110. I ask him, like, is he gonna, if BIP110 doesn't get the majority of hash power and like doesn't have the most cumulative work on it, is he gonna follow the minority chain? And he said, you know, basically he'll just kind of leave. He just doesn't want to be part of Bitcoin anymore. That's what he said.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Yeah. Someone chimed in. Had Topher's shared Topher sentiment. Is like, I'm gonna hold you to that, or I'm gonna do my best to hold you to that, or something like that, or remind you of this.
So the one I wanted to bring up was this one, because I think this is me and Topher were talking about it right before the show. Was the Schmitty comment one? So this one's from Jason Hughes, who's the VP of Engineering at Ocean. So it's this document that he shared here, which I think is an interesting question that he asked Mechanic here. It says, did you advocate for or against Ocean publishing this seemingly thoughtful and accurate information for your users and customers? Why or why not? And why wasn't it ultimately published? And so Mechanic said, there have been many attempts to agree on official comms regarding BIP110 scenarios that were sadly fruitless. In the end, what happens next month depends on who you talk to, as well as how miners can prepare for it. Jason said what he believes to be likely and stated that they're his views in so doing. I didn't have access to what he wrote prior, didn't have the option of approving or disapproving. So it sounds like neither advocation or against was on his side from what I'm reading that. But let's get into the piece, because I think this is pretty informative, dude, because it literally breaks down what miners need to know. Even goes as far as explaining how Bitcoin softworks work. It talks about the two activation paths. Obviously, I had to get Topher to explain some of this stuff to me, because it was just a little bit confusing. From a person that's just like running a node and wants to send Bitcoin transactions, what happens after this certain block comes? And then to me, question I have for you, Keon, I don't know if you read this post, this whole paper or not, or looked at it, but why wouldn't you release it? Like, why wouldn't you release this paper? Like, that's kind of where I'm lost. Or even just like do a workshop or something. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly the details. It seems like there's some disagreement between Hughes and Mechanic about like what happened with this paper after it was written, or an AI wrote it, or AI assisted wrote it. It seems like Hughes is saying that they wanted to publish it on like the company through company comms and was denied the ability to do that, and so that's why they published it from their personal account. We don't know if that's true. And I don't know how strongly Hughes meant that when he said it, but that's what Schmitty was asking in the comment there, and Mechanic denied. So it's a bit of a he said, she said situation, or he said situation. And yeah, I mean, it could be if Mechanic, Mechanic understands like how important perception is and public sentiment and stuff like that, and this like consensus in Bitcoin is fundamentally a social thing, and if you start telling people it's going to fail, there's going to be less people on the side of that side of the fork, so maybe you want less people talking about it. That would be like Mechanic's motive if he did suppress it, but we don't know if he suppressed it.
But I mean, the way this reads, it sounds like, yeah, if BIP110 doesn't get enough of the hash power, then that's it. Then everybody just moves over to the main chain. Like, there's, it's kind of ho hum a little bit, just like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can't really conclude what people are going to do, but I think you can make conclusions. And I think it's mostly what Hughes does. You can make conclusions about like where hash power is going to go, and for the most part, and where economic activity is going to stay and things like that. But there's, you could still fall if BIP110 forks off, you could still follow that chain if you want, and participate in that other Bitcoin. And I'm sure there will be some people that do that, like they did with Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, it is right here. It's like the realistic scenarios and what they mean for miners. The outcome of BitBoin 10 is not predetermined, no matter what anyone tells you. BitBoin 10 has not already won. It doesn't already have consensus. It is not required upgrade, etc. Miners should think through the range of scenarios rather than planning only for a single outcome. Three most realistic paths diverge significantly in their implications for your hash rate and rewards. And kind of go through the different scenarios. But to me, it almost seems like, you know, I mean, just like how it works inside of PubLab, like when something gets created by, you know, somebody else inside of, you know, with Teresa or whoever it is, it gets to me, I review it, I then send it back to her, and then she reviews it, fixes it. And then maybe if I want a third opinion, I'll ask somebody else. Like, but that's usually how it works. It almost seems like this got created, got handed back, and then it got handed back, or got handed and then got handed back, and then that was that, which is kind of weird.
Well, I don't think we know that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just weird that you would have this like informational document and then like nothing, because I didn't even hear about this document until, of all people, Schmitty shared it, which is on the Bitcoin Core side, right? Which is, it's just weird, dude. That's all I'm saying. This is just weird. That's just weird.
Oh, well, he published it before this comment that Schmitty made. This was published by Jason on
X. He did publish. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so he published it right here. But like, why wouldn't you release that?
Got some numbers.
As a like from Ocean though.
Because I think
they both work, like the weird thing is they both work at Ocean. So it's kind of like it's just strange to me that there wouldn't be like talking.
Well, I think they are talking. They just disagree, and it's hard because they, you know, there's a lot of passionate people on both sides, and Mechanic happens to be very passionate on one side. I think Jason is more just kind of calculating and thinking about it.
The paper doesn't seem like it's for either side. It's just like these are the facts. That's what it reads like to me.
No, but I think a lot of people on the pro BIP110 side disagree with the facts as presented in a paper like that. That is kind of the problem. Is like we covered them on this podcast before. Like Melvin's website that he made about BIP110, and Luke is out there tweeting that BIP110 can't fail because BIP110 is the real Bitcoin. So regardless of whether it has more hash rate or not, it still succeeded. It's kind of, I think he's done. You know, he doesn't really share all that, like expose all that reasoning for us to criticize.
I think
that's the math he's doing.
I think the bigger thing I'm trying to highlight here is that if you can't even have consensus in your own company, how the hell do you expect to have consensus into an overall Bitcoin ecosystem? That to me is kind of the major point that I'm trying to push here, which is I don't understand that. I don't get that. Like, especially when you're just like trying to work together through a problem, like, and you can't get to consensus on it. It's just weird.
Yeah, perfect consensus is just hard. I mean, even among a small group like a company. So, but I think that's a valid point. It should suggest to the pro BIP110 people who are like, this can't, everyone supports it, everyone reasonable supports it. They have people that they're working with that they respect who disagree with that statement.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? There should be respect there. Like, they got hired for a reason, right?
Yeah,
it's wild. I don't know. Anyways, but that's the latest. Check it out here. Ask them some questions. Shout out to Mechanic for actually doing this AMA. I mean, it must not be fun to have to answer all these questions, but either way, it's good to see.
No, he's a good sport.
He's a good sport about it. Yeah. Anyways, so that's that. We're going to jump into the other one. Yeah, we're going to jump into Keon's post, which is Jeff Booth is launching a new venture called Orange Juice. It's from Diego. Two comments, 493 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I mean, there are several reasons why I want to talk about this. One of them, I think, is that the branding on the main website, I was hoping that this would be the main website. Branding on the main website is great. They call this fund Orange Juice, and it has a lot of fun graphics, and I think they do a really good job with it. And then the idea, I think, is kind of novel. Basically, what they're doing is they're starting a private equity firm. So they've like raised funds because this is from a lot of people who are involved at Ego Death. So familiar with Ego Death, they're like a venture capital firm and they invest in startups, I think, Series A, and they might do seed, but Series A and larger, I think they've raised a few funds, hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a new thing from them. more akin to private equity, although it's a bit different in that a lot of private equity exists to buy companies, make them more profitable than they were, then sell them to someone else, and then make money on that. Their position is that they're going to buy these companies and hold them. They're specifically buying companies that generate cash flow, and then they are going to back it all with a Bitcoin treasury. So it's kind of like what we see in the public markets with these treasury companies, although they're using a similar playbook in private equity. And I'd guess they're going to get leveraged on all these cash flow generating businesses, because a bank loves nothing more than to give loans to cash flow generating businesses, and they're probably going to buy Bitcoin with it. And I think it's actually probably going to do pretty well. Not that I want this to be the majority of economic activity in Bitcoin, but this seems to be a trend, and it's at least a new idea that I hadn't considered or heard of before. We have someone in the lab. I wish Ted was here, but this is something Ted talks about a lot. He's like, if you really want to get levered up on Bitcoin and like decrease your liability, what you do is you buy something like a landscaping business or something that's generating cash flow. And then you do exactly this, where you convert all of that into Bitcoin, you take out loans, buy Bitcoin with it, you hold Bitcoin, you service the loans with the cash flow from the business, and you just keep getting more Bitcoin. And that's effectively what Orange Juice is doing, except with much more scale, because they've raised money from a variety of partners. And another thing I wanted to say is a lot of the team from Ego Death, and actually many venture capitalists in Bitcoin, their background is private equity. And you know, they succeeded in private equity, and then they were interested in Bitcoin and came to Bitcoin and started doing venture. But now they're getting back to private equity. And so, interesting.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like when he talks about this part here at the top where he says, in this environment, building durable value is genuinely hard. The challenges for business these days. Because companies are pushed to chase short-term gains over sustainable growth. The deep problem structure of most companies today are financially engineered for a credit system. And so he's kind of basically just talking about how all these companies, like even the ag companies, are just like levered up. Like even Elon's companies like levered up. I mean, they're making cash flow. There's revenue there, but a lot of it's dependent on the government and all sorts of things. So it's good to see them finally return back to like sound businesses. And Jimmy Song always talks about this a lot. Buying a car wash, like open up a car wash and take Bitcoin in it, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it sounds like they're not necessarily have any interest in buying Bitcoin businesses. It seems like their main like criteria is that the business is generating cash flow. So I imagine, they might have a bias towards one industry or another, but I think the fund itself has nothing to do with like Bitcoin entrepreneurs as much as it does with, you know, businesses that are performing well, that would do well among a portfolio of other businesses that being backed by a Bitcoin treasury would benefit everyone. That's kind of the scenario.
Good stuff. We're going to jump into, was there any meta or anything like that?
No meta this week.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's just jump into the comments then. Or before the comments, we can jump into the top Cowboys. That's pretty much it. Go into the top Cowboys. Giddy on up. It takes a second to load there. Did you notice that?
Oh, no. Maybe your finger took a second to click it.
Just saying. Maybe it's a little looking too. Number one. Number one is still in hiding. We don't know who that is. Could be somebody in this room. Dum, dum, dum. That Coob. Undisciplined, Blockchain Boog, Great Ruby. Anything change here? I feel like Satwise is new.
Yeah, I think they've been moving up the ranks a bit.
Crypto Sensei.
It's possible someone there moved out.
That gap's going to be tough for Satwise. Look at this. It's 102.
Yeah, but I mean, Crypto's only had it for 100, or Cryo has only had it for 100
That's
days.
That's half a year, bro.
It's not. It's a third time. Of a year. It's less than a third of a year.
Close enough. Look at this. Oh, wow. Scoresby's is way over than this one. Yeah, see, that's going to be another tough climb.
Yeah, breaking in the top seven is going to be tough. That's what that shows to me.
Oh, wait. Oh, wow. Yeah, because even Scoresby's like, Gray Ruby's like double.
Yeah, you have a real power.
Look at Boog, dude. When did this happen? Oh, wow. Boog and Gray Ruby are kind of neck and neck here. That's crazy. I didn't know. I didn't know that. Never really looked. Oh wait, Undisciplined. Wait, Undisciplined and Booger neck and neck.
Neck and neck is maybe the wrong way to view it, because it's like Undisciplined misses a day, it goes back to zero. So there's like no catching up for Blockchain Boog. It's really Blockchain Boog. If Blockchain Boog sticks with it and Undisciplined doesn't, then Blockchain Boog takes the lead. That's really.
I wonder
there's
if.
There's no coming back for Undisciplined if he loses.
Like what happens if you get to 1,000 and then you miss a day? Like what does that feel like?
It's supposed to feel bad. Or I've heard from people that it feels bad.
Yeah. I'll never know that feeling. Oh, you got Webster coming up. Look at that. 5 days. Boom.
Dang, bro.
Everybody's flying in here.
Boom. We had a lot of people drop out in July.
Yeah, it's a bear market.
It's what they do.
Yeah, it's a bear market. But anyways, we gotta watch this top seven here and then the Satwise Crypto Sensei.
Oh, yeah, keep an eye out. Yeah, you might want to refresh it every once in a while.
I would refresh it every day. I would be the first thing you do every morning is go right here to the Cowboy section.
Yeah, just watch to keep up how unchanging it is. Be like a Zen meditation.
Yeah. We're gonna jump into the comments this week. It's gonna be a lot. Let's dive into it. The first one is from hang on, let me go back here. So let's do the YouTube ones. So this was on the Gregory Maxwell thing. Bake said, stay in your nook. What does that mean? N-U-L-L-C? Do you know what that means?
Oh, my bad. I was worried. Let's see. Null C, stay in Null C. Oh, yeah. I think that is Maxwell's handle on Reddit.
There you go. Nice little fun fact there from Vake. We got Bit Blay. He says, what? Bit110 kicks spam off the real Bitcoin by closing up false exploit that came about by means of bad unintended and not by design code introduced in Taproot. Patch was available. I forgot to hit read more. Available 22, but shut down. Wow, it goes into it. Oh, there you go.
Seems like copy pasta. This seems like
one of those where you're just like up at night, you're just like watching and you're like, this guy, blah, 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 blah.
I don't, but I feel like this is just like the same thing I've heard said like a billion times.
Yeah, dude, look, it goes into read more. I didn't even grab that part. So that's probably a whole paragraph there. It just venting. Neat Creation said, nice episode, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentleman.
Yeah, Thomas said, they are indoctrinating the people not to take up for themselves as it has become illegal for the flock stuff. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. This one's from Jerry about the Ukraine frontline drone stuff. He said gathering this on rolls would be very helpful for the guys. Hopefully that is what the plan is.
So I think it's a fiber optic cable.
Yeah. What does he mean grabbing it on rolls? I guess like taking them to people, removing them.
I think just grabbing the fiber optic cable, maybe either for study or for repurposing for something else. Maybe they could use it for their own drones.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's expensive to get.
We had this guy named Kenny. He said, hopefully they figure out how to ban crypto already. Wow. People hate watch SNL, you think? Is that a thing?
I bet he got served like one of the YouTube clips or something. And
well,
that was what he did.
He doesn't even know about freedom. I got Cutco Hover said that, and certain apps just will not work, like banks and console mobile apps. Because of the Google Play services talking about graphene. We got the Mars one. The Mars one was Mars is going to take decades before they go. They'll first learn everything they can on the moon before making the attempt. Did you know that, Keon? Did you know they were going to do that? According to the pigs, Jinjin Sham said that.
The pigeon shaman. I mean, if he's a shaman to pigeons, we should really respect his
probably
on
the moon right now.
Astronomical things. So I'd say, yeah, I'd say that actually is a pretty logical first step, is to do a lot of things on the moon before doing them on Mars. So
I would just go full.
The pigeon shaman has seen the future.
I was watching The Martian the other day, and it was really good. I forgot how good that movie was. We got more. I'm telling you, there's a lot of comments this week. These are all from YouTube. We haven't gotten to the foul ones yet. On the Jimmy Song piece, said, how exactly are Bit110 supporters lying? I'd say the opposite. You should interview Bitcoin Mechanic.
Well, we just did an AMA, BTC1H6M.
Bazinga!
So we've done it. I think this is in respect. This is a response. I think the week that Jimmy Song posted his piece about BIP 110 stuff, I was responding to some of the things I BIP 110 supporters were telling me that I supported BIP 110.
Oh, they were?
Yeah. So that I know is a lie. And so that's like the foundation on which I call them liars. I think that I've also seen other things that I think are manipulative and I think are lies. I don't have the same level of proof that I do when there's someone says something about me. That's not true. But
we were talking about this earlier in the show. There's a lot of dark art, like dark arts of marketing going on there. That's what I've seen. And that's what I would say. We've seen a lot of the dark arts of marketing being used by certain people. No names. Anyways, I'm going to go to massive incentive to hard fork Bitcoin, BIP 110 dividends. We can only hope. Only hope. We'll see. This one. Do you want to read this comment? I'm not trying to get in trouble anymore.
Oh, I don't even know what it said. What did it say? I'll read it. Okay. Someone made physical threat to someone who runs a treasury company.
Okay. And then we're going to go to the other one. The graphene said, yeah, like whatever, dudes. And then the Helix for Ukraine said, thank you. Yeah, pretty good. All right, let's go jump into Fountain comments now. Actually, we should probably start from the lowest one. Yeah. No, this was the earliest one. So we should start from the end. Undisciplined said, we talked to Chrysalis about how New York sports fans choose their teams. Listen to our extra many episodes to find out. By the way, Coop's probably right about Brunson's height. Most players lie about how tall they are.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. This is why you should listen to Stacker Sports.
Sounds like they got some real facts there.
Blockchain Boots said, zap. Undisciplined said, good for you, boys. Get a sponsor for your little podcast thing.
Again, thanks. He's trying. I don't know why he's trying to poke the bear.
It's okay. Poke away. Blockchain Boots said, what does the SNL team think about Club Orange app?
We already discussed that one.
Oh, we did already? Okay. Yeah. All right. Got that one. Blockchain Book said, correction on the Strike loan post commentary. I use my tax refund to buy Bitcoin to take out a loan and pay old fiat debt instead of directly paying off debt. No Bitcoin was purchased with the loaned fiat. He's talking about his post, right?
Yes. That's right. Okay. Yeah. He uses tax refund to buy Bitcoin to take out a loan and pay. Okay. So he got new debt of that. New secured debt with Bitcoin that he used to pay off older debt that, you know, so he like consolidated his debt by taking out a Bitcoin loan. And I recall that I misstated that on that podcast and was wrong about that.
Blockchain Blue said, zap. Undisciplined said, wow, Carr and Coop drop shorts. Oh, yeah. I've been doing that. And then, where's this one
here? Maybe when you guys get a real production over there at Stacker Sports, you guys can do some shorts.
Wow. That's. That's not nice. This is from last week. Undisciplined said this. He said, for more about Bitcoin Quest, tune into Stacker Sports next week. Oh, I guess they're going to have on Phil. We'll see.
Oh,
wow. Gray Ruby, 100 sets. And then Undisciplined says, forget but never forgive when it comes. That was for episode 30. 230. Yep, okay. And that's all the comments.
Forget but never forgive.
Yep.
Oh, I prefer the other way. I think he was saying, and because I think I say that I like to forgive but not forget.
Keon, what are you doing this week?
What am I going to be doing? I'm going to sleep probably because I'd really like that. Otherwise, I'm going to have a manic episode and run around naked in the streets or something.
Nice.
So probably sleep, probably work, probably yoga. I'd like to get back to yoga. That is a thing I'd like to do. How about you? What are you up to?
I'm going to eat this sushi that I have here right after the show. But after that, probably I need to play with the 11 Labs audio stuff. So I'm going to do that this tomorrow. I'm going to come in and get to play with some new stuff.
What are you trying to do with 11 Labs?
So they gave us a grant. So I'm going to try to see if I can wire in some videos there. And then I'm going to try to work on some dubbing stuff and sound effects stuff. So I'm going to try to do that.
They gave you a grant of credits?
Yeah, they gave us like 33 million credits.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm going to play with that this weekend. So I'm looking forward to that. I want to see the Odyssey movie. But to be honest, though, like, There's a lot of really good reviews. A lot of people that I trust that are like doing movie reviews on it have said great things about it. So I'm like, I'm itching to go, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if I could stand a 3-hour Nolan, Christopher Nolan, blaring loud music.
You told me thing. You weren't going to go see that movie.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. Like, it's watching a Christopher Nolan movie is just like a whole thing. And I feel like if I'm going to watch it, I'm actually want to like be in a mood to watch a movie that long. And then, you know, because his movies are just like so freaking thumping. They're just like,
they're very intense.
There's like so intense and there's unrelenting sometimes. He's like the opposite of Kubrick.
Yeah, I thought you were saying that you weren't going to watch it because of like the trailer looked bad. I know a lot of people have criticisms.
Okay. It does look bad, but I've been hearing some reviews and it sounds like it's actually like there's some terrible parts in it. It sounds like from what they said, but it sounds like it's actually a really good movie.
I've been seeing interviews with Anne Hathaway, who looks great for her age. I don't know what kind of adrenochrome they're injecting in her, but she looks pretty awesome. And even next to Emily Blunt, who I think is younger.
Really? Then, well, she's had kids, right? Like they both have kids.
But I don't think kids make you like age more in the face.
I don't want to comment on
it. Might dip, you know, genetics are like a huge factor in these things.
Like, I feel like
adrenochrome could also be one.
So. I feel like if you saw my mom before she had kids and you see her after, yeah, there's a big difference.
Yeah, I think the main thing that
because you're talking about how attractive she was, right? Anne Hathaway.
No, I was saying she looks younger.
She's not attractive. She just looks younger.
She is attractive as well.
Oh, okay.
But she also just looks younger.
But she hasn't had any kids.
Yeah, I disagree with the statement that when people have kids, they get less attractive.
I didn't say that. I just said that they look different.
You just said something that was exactly like that. Yeah, all good.
Trying to walk it back. Yeah.
Women
let me
still
do my dark
okay
arts.
With
I'm
you.
Trying to walk it back.
Women love misogynists. Apparently.
Because if you look at who the other person you said, Emily Blunt, she's had kids.
That was your point that you already made. Yeah. That she had kids and therefore she's busted now.
I didn't say that. You said that.
I mean, it's exactly
you
what you said.
That. You just said that. I'm putting words in my mouth.
I think I just recorded you and I just played it back.
Anyways. Yeah, I guess that's another perk watching Odyssey. I didn't even think about Anne Hathaway that she was in there. I totally forgot about her.
Yeah. Anyway, it does look, I've just been seeing a lot of clips from it and it, I don't know. Looks like they're happy about it.
Yeah, it looks like it doesn't look like Oppenheimer where I'm like, oh, I gotta go watch that. I don't have that kind of like, but it is, it's like, you know, it's a Christopher Nolan movie, it's an event, so I definitely want to see it and write my own review on Stacker News. And
I wasn't that interested in seeing Oppenheimer. Just seemed a little too,
it's a good movie though.
Yeah, it was a good
just
movie.
Too loud.
Also loud, but it just seemed kind of more contrived. Nolan films feel, I don't know, it feels like someone I know making a movie. There's something about it that feels a little more like raw relative to, even though they're very contrived too and heavily produced, and he has his own style. It's not like made, I don't feel like they're made to win awards, they just do. Does that make sense? Like they're made the way he wants to make them, and then they maybe do well. I don't know. That's the way I feel about them when I watch them. Is I don't feel like that he needs me to like the movie. Yeah. That he's like cares a lot about.
Dude, I've been watching Christopher Nolan movies since when I was a kid, and I worked at Blockbuster. I remember the first time Memento. There's like this guy He came in. He's like, "You got to see Memento," and I had never heard of who Guy Pearce was, and I was just like, "I'm not gonna watch this." And then they're like, "No, you gotta watch it." And everybody started talking about it. And then I went to watch it and I was like blown away. I was like, who is this guy? I've never heard of Christopher Nolan. And then his next movie that he made was the Al Pacino one. And that one didn't live up to it. And then I kind of just forgot about him. And then it wasn't until people started saying that he was going to make the Batman, because it was supposed to be Aronofsky that was going to make the Batman, but he got to make the Batman. And then that was when everything changed. Like that was like, oh wow. Like, Batman Begins was really good, and then The Dark Knight like changed things. That was when he really got on the map, was after The Dark Knight.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
Before then, he had just made like a bunch of short films, and because he didn't go to film school from what he said about it in interviews. So, I mean, I'm curious to see it. I'm But I'm like reluctant.
Sounds like you're gonna watch it.
I'm reluctant to go watch it though, because it's a long movie, man. It feels more work than anything. It feels like work. If that makes any sense. I feel like most Christopher Nolan movies are work. Like Tenet, that was a lot of work, man.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think you just have to resign to not understanding it. I think that's how I got through Tenet. I was like, oh, these are pretty. This is interesting, and it's pretty, and fun. Actiony things are happening on the moving screen, but it didn't really make any sense. You could try, but
no, it makes sense. Like, if it just takes you like 20 times to watch it, then you have to watch a YouTube explainer, and then yeah. No, it does make Tenet's actually a badass movie. I actually appreciate it more now than when I saw it live. But I watched one of those explainers.
Yeah. I still do not get it.
No, so he was going in, and at the same time, he was going out the other way.
I got the high level stuff.
So as he was crossing through time, his old self was going back into. That's my.
I got the high level stuff. It's like the details of it where I get it doesn't really make sense, and it might just be a plot hole. But it's hard to tell if it's a plot hole or I'm just. It was so hard to understand to begin with. It might actually make perfect sense. I just don't understand that.
I don't think it was a plot hole, because if you look at some of those shots, dude, like he would have had to map this out like on a whiteboard.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if you've mapped it out and it made a bunch of sense to begin with. I assume it gets cut in a way where it's mostly appealing to an audience and might not make any sense anymore.
So. I'm sure there's probably different cuts of that where it's like, you know, they always say like the movie is made in the editing room type of thing.
Oh, yeah. That is a thing they say. I've heard
that. Anyways, if you ever see this crazy show, check us out next week. We're going to do this all over again at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Keon.
Zap.
Where's my mouse? Oh, there it goes. Oh, wait. Oh, there it goes.